welcoming for a fireside chat, Christopher Bishop and Harry Shum.
Great. Harry, first of all, thanks hugely for taking the time to join us. I know you've had an incredibly busy day.
Yeah.
You've literally just flown back into Seattle. So tell us what you've been through today.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations, Chris, and both for the incredible lab you have built over 20 years in Cambridge. And of course, it's nothing beats this great honor of the Royal Society signing on the same book as Newton. It's an incredible achievement. I just came back about 2 hours ago. I was this morning at this big Microsoft internal event we call the Ready. This is actually a week-long event for our sales force. Roughly half of our company is actually working on the sales and marketing side. Every year, we use this opportunity to share with our field, the sales force, what's happening in the company. And we also live broadcast all those presentations from the conference and across the company. It happens to be in Vegas. It's only 114 degrees there. It's just incredible. I hardly went outside, so I was so happy to come back to join you and the faculty summit.
That's great you could be here. So what I thought we'd do, have maybe 20 minutes or so, you and I having a bit of a chat about AI. And then after that, we'll open it up to the audience. So please be thinking of some interesting questions on the topic of AI for Harry. But maybe I can just dive right in. And I'm going to start with a fairly tough question, because this is a bit like asking parents about their favorite child or something. But there's a lot of work in MSR worldwide around AI. But are there any things that particularly stand out for you right now?
That's really a tough one. And I guess if I can take this one, the rest will be easy. It's just so many exciting things going on in MSR. I feel extremely fortunate and very proud of what we have done in the last 26 years in MSR. There are actually three areas I recently very excited about it, and not surprisingly, you would agree that AI is certainly one of them. I get to that later. Two other areas I feel very, very excited about. One is actually very forward-looking. The other one is also very, very timely. The one very forward-looking is quantum computing. We have been working on the Station Q, quantum computing, for a long, long time. I think we're getting to a point that we feel we are getting very close to get the stable qubits that we can produce. Certainly, Mike Friedman will be able to tell you a lot more details. One thing I can share with you is that we feel so confident that we actually started to really work with experimental physicists to really get to the physics level. How can we really construct those qubits? Once you get enough of those qubits, then the great things can happen. The other area I feel very, very excited about, and very timely for Microsoft, is on security and the privacy. Specifically on security, this incredible initiative across all our labs, certainly Cambridge Lab as well, is on this what we call the confidential computing and the secure computing. The idea there is that really not only you can do encryption at rest and on the go, but also during computation. So this has been a very exciting research area for us over quite a few years. It's fantastic to see we have an opportunity to move those technology into Microsoft products.
That's very relevant for AI, of course.
Absolutely.
It's so data-driven, and we care about data privacy and security. So.
Yeah, it has profound impacts in the over many, many things that we want to do at Microsoft. And in AI, of course, there are many things that we do. I heard Eric give a fantastic presentation this morning, and I had the opportunity to go through his slides earlier. We do many things, and I'm not going to talk about a lot of things that Eric mentioned about. I just bring a couple of examples that where I see great MSR research having incredible impact on the products. One of those areas is actually machine reading. A lot of interesting things happening in natural language. And we as a company deal with a lot of texts, whether it's email, web page, or even any kind of documents. There's so much that we can do. We absolutely working hard on that. Office 365, Outlook, Word, and many of those things. We depend on a lot of MSR technology along this line. We loosely call the machine reading comprehension. The other area is actually probably a little bit of personal bias, is really the connection between the visual images, videos, and the natural language description. Sometimes people call it the captions from image and the captions from video. I think true, you know, image understanding has to be connected with natural language.
Mm. You're giving a keynote, aren't you, next week, is it?
This Sunday.
This Sunday.
It's a little bit embarrassing. I was invited to go give a keynote at the CVPR, which used to be my main conference, until 2007. I believe 2007 was the last time I really participated at the CVPR. This time I got a chance to go attend again and give a keynote, you know, mostly really about, you know, sharing some lessons we have learned from Microsoft. The title of my talk is called Commercializing Computer Vision. So I will talk about a few examples, including HoloLens, how we actually organize research efforts, how we actually do move the research from to the product side and with the flywheel.
That's great. Actually, yeah. That's a good hook into my next question, which is sort of step back a little bit. And a few months ago, the company created this new organization, AI&R, and appointed you as the leader of this. So can you tell us a little bit about AI&R and its mission?
Yeah. Well, I'm incredibly excited about and very honored to have this opportunity to lead AI&R for Microsoft. AI&R is actually our fourth engineering division and the research division.
And R is research.
R is research, yeah. AI and the research. The other three parts of engineering groups, in case you don't know and are curious, those three are Windows and devices, office productivity, and clouds and enterprise. AI and the research is the fourth one, and the latest and the smallest one, actually. We only have 7,500 people in our division. So, but it's very timely and important for the company, as you see, you know, the incredible progress has been made in the last several years, in particular in AI. Many areas of AI, many of those great examples this morning from Eric, you know, you already seen. But we feel this is really the right time to not only do great research, but also really having impact on Microsoft business, first of all, through products and the services and the opportunities to really democratize AI technology to third parties, to our customers. So that is the really starting point. And recently, I had the have had a lot of opportunities talking to many people outside of Microsoft as well, including many CEOs, CTOs, and engineering leaders. Everyone is just so excited about AI and also so worried that, you know, what if we miss this AI thing? I think there's certainly a lot of hype over there. My joke is that, you know, you have to claim that you like and you do AI, artificial intelligence, because the opposite of artificial intelligence is natural stupidity. So you just have to say it. You know, if you don't do AI, what else did you do? So that's the problem. And But on a serious note, we really believe there are great opportunities for the company and for our customers, even more importantly.
And anything in particular, any particular products or services that you see coming along?
Yeah, I'd be happy to share more. So the way we think about with the AI and the research division is really about, you know, what kind of really products and services that we can offer. So by and large, we think about, you know, three lines of products that we build. The first one is really the first-party AI products that you probably feel reasonable, along the line of, say, you know, search engine Bing and the digital assistants like Cortana. I certainly very much believe in that. The ultimate form of AI is actually in digital assistants, in the right place, right time, with right information, helping you to do right things. Still very, very early. Along that line, we actually do very good work on chatbots. So we have been building chatbots like no one else. And especially we start from China, great success with Xiao Eyes. Then we were doing Rina in Japan, Zoe in the United States, and we're doing rule in India. So we will continue to expand our effort. So this is one line of products that we feel very committed, and the long term we'll keep pushing. The second line of products, also very reasonable for Microsoft take on, is what we call infusing AI into every single product and service Microsoft offers, especially with Office. Imagine, you know, that with PowerPoint, you know, we already embedded, you know, machine translation into PowerPoint. You know, when you do PowerPoint presentation, the audience, depending on the what kind of languages they like, they can actually tune into that language. Another thing we actually incorporated into PowerPoint is actually image caption. So now when you import an image into PowerPoint, you know, immediately we can offer you image captions if we feel confident. If we're not confident after analyzing the picture, we might be confident enough to show you some entities detected from the image. So it's still very early, but with PowerPoint, we actually, every day, we actually have 10 million images actually get captioned. And we also have, you know, Word, PowerPoint, and many other things that we can do. The great work from your lab, for example, you know, with Excel, you know, what we are doing when, as you import data into various cells, you know, what kind of things we can process there using some machine learning and AI tech. So that's really second line of work that we do. And I should also mention about really applying AI, you know, into our cloud. Azure is becoming the most intelligent cloud, literally, you know, as if you look at what kind of AI capabilities we can offer there. The third line of our products that is, I would say, is pretty new, and is something that I have thought of long and hard and have decided that we'll have to take that on. It's really the new and the emerging business processes. As we think about, you know, all different kind of verticals and all different vertical industries and all different kind of horizontal business processes, I certainly believe that they will all be disrupted by AI and the data. The vertical industries like healthcare, you know, something you, Peter, and Chris Jones have been working on, it's just so obvious that we should get in, you know, apply our AI technology. You know, the challenge is that in what way and with what business model and how should we think about a partnership. And as we think about the horizontals, you know, maybe it's even more interesting. You know, all the business processes we actually deal with today, like sales and the marketing, like customer support and customer services, like HR and the recruiting, all those things will be transformed. It's just so obvious should be in everyone's mind. Now you actually have data. Now you actually can do the process. Now you can apply AI. So those things, in my mind, will be low-hanging fruits, you know, so to speak, if you care about creating a new business. Mm-hmm. So those three directions are what we now focus on in Microsoft, especially for AI and R. But it's really not just us. You know, we work together with other parts of the company.
Mm, that's great. An amazing time to be in the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much,
absolutely.
Much,
yeah.
Let me ask you a little bit about Microsoft in particular. And how would you say that Microsoft's approach to AI perhaps differs from those of others? What makes Microsoft special when it comes to AI?
Well, Chris, I would start by asking a slightly more general question, that, you know, what is the special about Microsoft? I think every company has its own culture, has its own mission, has its own point of view. You know, why should we even exist? You know, Satya, you know, very clear that we should always question ourselves. What would people miss if we simply just disappear as a company? I think we are very, very clear that we exist to serve other people and other companies. Our company mission statement is incredibly, you know, crisp, in my opinion. That's empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. Now with AI, so that is really the high-level guiding principle. So do that with AI. And more specifically, I would say, if you look at, you know, our position, our assets, you know, our history, I think we approach AI, you know, both, you know, with a very practical approach, yet with long-term commitment. I started with long-term commitment. So we started Microsoft Research 26 years ago. At that time, you know, Bill Gates said, wow, wouldn't that be nice? You know, someday computers could see, hear, talk, and understand human beings. You know, what is that? You know, those computers are called AIs. So most people don't know that among the first groups we ever started in the Redmond lab, that's the first lab we ever started, the first three groups were natural language group, speech group, and the computer vision group. So we started that, you know, 26 years ago, you know, anticipating, AI will make a great progress, general AI, we'll work towards general AI. We definitely continue to have this commitment and the confidence. We continue to invest in research, really take on those very tough problems, the question that you always want to address, and Eric, Sue, and many others, care about. We continue to push that. Yet at the same time, I would say, we do have those products that can infuse AI to immediately help our customers. I already mentioned about PowerPoint. I already mentioned about cloud. You can, and also Excel. You can imagine that Word will become more intelligent. Word should become a really writing tool, much more intelligent than today. Even more interesting to me, my favorite application nowadays of AI is actually Outlook. There's really no reason why Outlook search is so difficult, and a smart reply is not very smart, and the reminders are not very intelligent. All those things now, we, AI, are, work together with Office teams, very, very closely. So I would say that, first of all, we have our own, company's mission, that really guides our AI work. And then we are both practical and the long term.
That sounds great. So, so lots of opportunities then for AI. What about the other side? What about the risks associated? I mean, do you wake up at 3 a.m. worried about killer robots and lasers and that sort of? Or do you see any risks in AI?
I do if I don't worry about those products. yeah. There are many things that we should worry about in the. But I'm not too worried about things like super intelligence, and but they are practical things we do need to worry about, in my opinion. The first thing I would say probably is whatever AI apply to the physical world. A concrete example is actually self-driving cars. I would predict that the most challenging time would be when half of those cars on the street are self-driving and half of them are still human driving. I don't think we really understand enough yet. I think we are fooling ourselves just saying, today, autonomous driving is already there. It's just going to take some time. I learned something just a couple of weeks ago at the MIT advisory board meeting. Ronnie Brooks was there talking about the robotics. And inevitably, one of the topics there was actually self-driving. And he, if I understand in his point of view, he's actually very cautious about how soon we see autonomous driving cars there. His kind of argument is straightforward. He said, look, if you drive in Cambridge, Boston, the fake Cambridge, not the real one. So if you drive in Cambridge, you really couldn't drive if you don't violate the traffic laws. now how did you program into that? And I think that is something that we're still learning. It's still very, very early. And the direction is very clear. It's just about the staging. The other thing we as a company, as an industry, worry about is the profound impact with AI, with automation that we will see on the job market. I think every technology disruption, every technology innovation will have certain impacts. But this time, I think people tend to believe this thing is probably going to be more real than others. We don't understand that, what kind of new jobs it will open up. We already see some jobs will be transformed. So those are the things that actually we worry about as a company. And maybe the last thing I personally worry about AI, not much about super intelligence. It's really that the reason AI is so different from many other incredible innovations in the history of human being is that most of the previous innovations, there's much about extending human physical capability. And this time with AI, we're talking about extending brain power as well. Yet, we don't really understand the human brains. And the neuroscience is still, in my opinion, still very much in the early stage. So something that we keep learning.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think actually also there's sort of a risk the other way. There's a risk of things that may not go as well as we hope. But I wonder also that with very justifiable concerns about the data, about privacy, security,
and so on,
that we might go too far in the other direction, and that actually, I'm particularly interested in the healthcare space, for instance, there's tremendous societal benefit that we can see is potential, is latent there in AI.
That's right.
And we may shut that out if we overreact to some of these risks. So it feels like we need to find the right sort of middle ground here.
Right. I think one small step toward that, first of all, I totally agree with you on that. A very small step towards that, we have been learning through the development of many AI products, especially through our chatbots, is really this whole AI thing is not just about pure IQ intelligence. It has a lot what it's all about. That is about smart. It's actually more about empathy and understanding, just like humans, like EQ. So it's something that we still learn, what does this even mean? And when you interact with a human being, when did you make this kind of recommendation? When did you interrupt? And a lot of things, I think, is still very, very early. My favorite example is actually, I was talking to the Xiaowai's team in Beijing, and the chatbot knows where this person is, roughly through IP and others. And let's just say that it's already 1 a.m. in the morning, and this person keeps talking to the chatbot. So should chatbot slow down the response? Should chatbot say, you should go back to sleep? Now, what if it's already 2 a.m.? What if it's actually 3 a.m.? Does the chatbot have any responsibility? So those things, we're just very, very early, So we just have to really learn, along the way, how to design this kind of AI products.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And of course, it needs input from lots of different disciplines, right? Not just from, IT technologists and, social scientists and many others. I'm conscious of the time, and I'm keen to open this up to questions, but there's just one more question I'd like to touch on, because I know this is of tremendous interest, not just to Microsoft or the whole IT industry, but to industry generally, and of course the academic world, which is this extraordinary explosion we've seen in demand for talent in this space. And what are your thoughts on the talent pipeline and what we could do?
Well, it's truly amazing to see, how excited people are about AI, first of all. Then, how hungry, the companies are hiring AI talent. We all know that, just the price tag is just, sky high. Not too long ago, I was at a forum. I said to the press, I said, look, nowadays, if a young kid knows how to train 5 layers of neural net, the kid can absolutely demand 6 figures. If the kid can train, 50 layers of neural net, the kid probably will want, 7 figures. So it's just that the talent market is very, very hot out there. I think this is where we should work together with academia to train the next generation of AI talents. Students really know, what to do, what kind of tools they can do. At the same time, Microsoft, companies like Microsoft, have responsibilities to come up with the right tools. In Microsoft, we certainly do. We actually build 2 kinds of tools. One is actually for developers. The other one is actually for data scientists. For data scientists, we have Azure Machine Learning, go all the way end-to-end, how we train those models and tune those models. For developers, we have cognitive service APIs, and we should do even better, coming up with Visual Studio type of tools, and so that we can actually help you, put together a project, and debug the whole process, and then compile that, and take all kind of framework to compile together, all the way to different kind of running platforms like Azure with GPU, or even your home machine, or even to Raspberry Pi. So those things, I think, we have responsibility. Maybe last thing I can share with the audience is that we as a company, of course, struggle to train our own AI talents. So much so, I decided to start an AI school several months ago. It turns out to be a huge success. I know everyone wants to learn AI. And of course, we want to train every engineer, developer to become an AI engineer. Would love to learn from you the best practices and even partner together.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Harry. It's fantastic. So let's open it up to questions. We have various roving mics, so just put your hand up. Somebody will give you a microphone, and we have somebody here. So, yep, number three.
Hi, Julia Hockenmeyer, University of Illinois. I was just wondering whether you could expand a little bit more on what you see the role of academia to be and what we can do as faculty.
Well, that's a big question. That the way we look at that is Microsoft Research has had a very rich history of collaborating with many universities and many university professors. I feel very honored that many of you choose to come to visit us at this time and coming to Faculty Summit to have a chance that we can exchange ideas. Then we figured out things, even more things that we can work together. For Microsoft, and especially for Microsoft Research, we're very open. We do a lot of projects, and we write a lot of papers. Many of those papers we jointly do with the professors and the students. I don't really have anything that specific to say, in general, how professors should work with us or work with others. I think everyone has a different situation. I don't know, Chris, you want to add something? I know you you do things very successfully, like work with some universities in Europe, like a recent announcement with Amsterdam might be a great example you can share.
Yeah, sure. So I think this collaboration with the academic world is a very deep one and incredibly important. And I like to think that it's mutually beneficial. As Harry mentioned, just last week we announced another collaboration. This is with Max Welling, the University of Amsterdam. And there are really sort of two threads to this. One is around this talent pipeline. So really trying to partner with academia, because I think it's in everybody's interest that we really have a strong talent pipeline with the next generation of AI researchers coming along. So one of the things we do with Amsterdam, but actually more generally across Europe, is we fund actually a very large number of PhD students, but we don't just fund the students. I think more importantly, we actually, almost all of those students are co-supervised by researchers in MSR. And so it's a way of sort of adding some intellectual horsepower that augments that available in the universities and also helps the students get a little bit of a more of an industrial perspective as well to complement the academic perspective. And then, so that's one strand. And then the other strand is on the research side, where we're looking at some of the really cutting edge, the futuristic, the very long-term aspects of things around machine learning and AI, where we see really complementary strengths. In the case of the University of Amsterdam, real tremendous strength in areas around unsupervised learning and rich probabilistic models, combining probabilistic methods with deep learning, looking at things like causal discovery from data. And sure, we have expertise in MSR in those areas, but this is a vast and very active field, and we can't do everything on our own. And so these partnerships are incredibly beneficial. So I think those two things, both the talent pipeline and also the research collaboration, just incredibly important to us. Yeah. Who's next? Okay, yes, number two. If you just give us your name and affiliation as well, that'd be fantastic. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Barbara Gross from Harvard. So you can tell by my gray hair that in a few decades, I'm going to retire. And the advice for people retiring is to diversify their portfolio. So I see that you're making a really heavy investment in deep learning. You can also tell from my gray hair that I've been in AI for even more decades than MSR has existed. And I've seen these trends where there's one technique that's everything. And deep learning has done great things. But I'm wondering how diversified you see your portfolio of AI being, both in terms of the research and in terms of your school.
Well, listen to my talk tomorrow. That's part of the answer. But I'll let Harry
why don't you finish your answer first, and then I will compliment yours. Yeah.
Yeah. So deep learning has been undoubtedly a breakthrough. So there are things that we now do at much higher levels of performance than we did before.
And I think probably that breakthrough in deep learning has really rejuvenated the whole field. And in some sense, the reason we're excited about AI is because of that. However, the idea that everything can be solved by just shoveling labeled data through a deep neural network will, of course, be completely naive. I mean, it's so I think it injects a lot of energy and enthusiasm into the field, which is fantastic. I also think that it offers a new building block that we can combine with other techniques and that can amplify those other techniques and can advance the whole field. But it's certainly not on its own a complete solution to all the things we want to achieve. So yes, I'll be giving a talk tomorrow, a keynote, which I'll talk about a somewhat broader perspective on machine learning that hopefully will help answer the question.
I add a little bit. Well, first of all, Barbara, welcome to Microsoft again, and we love you. You should come to visit us more often. And Eric always talks about you and send more students to us. And I really think that we first of all should thank deep learning for its incredible contribution and the impact in the field of AI and the lot of excitement because of the deep learning. In certain areas, it actually worked beautifully in this speech recognition, vision recognition, and other things like deep reinforcement learning. I don't think people are naive that thinking just that deep learning is going to solve every problem, and I don't think people feel that way. But until we actually can build the tools that incorporate a lot of interesting deep learning models to a way that millions and millions of developers, engineers can easily do that. It's just like solving second order differential equation or whatever. I think that until then, and the people will still be mystified, what this deep learning really is and what's really going on. I hope that we in the next few years we'll be able to contribute with great tools coming from Microsoft. If you really look at what's happening in deep learning, a lot of those efforts has been really on the kind of architecture design of the deep neural nets that actually can perform better than others. And then you think about the really deep intellectual contributions coming out of the field. They do have something like generative adversarial networks and a few things like that. I'd love to see even more. I think we should do more deep learning research, and we see if we see more coming out of that. But still, you have to go back to those fundamentals. Many of those things Eric talked about, we certainly diversify in MSR AI, the areas that we focus on, get to the deep understanding of what is intelligence, what is cognition, how did you really build the models. So that's what we do here.
Great, fantastic. Who's next?
In the back.
Right at the in the far corner at the back is somebody. Okay, number three.
Hi, David Karger, MIT. What's been striking me today in a lot of the presentations is how a lot of the work that's going on in AI is about getting computers to do things that like reading or having a conversation that even relatively untrained humans are actually quite good at. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, we know the downsides of that for the future of work and things like that, but I wonder if you could talk a little about ways that AI might complement humans, empower them to do things that they can't do as opposed to replacing things that they're already pretty good at.
Maybe I started, Chris, you can add more. And thank you very much, David. And I hate to use this marketing slogan, but that's the marketing slogan we use at Microsoft when we talk about Microsoft AI. We say Microsoft AI is all about amplifying human ingenuity. It's really about adding more value to humans. We talk about, it's all about, the reason we actually do Microsoft AI is about the man and machine partnership, something that Chris, Eric, and others from MSR have helped our CEO, our senior leadership team to really frame what we really do there. I think there are numerous examples where that AI adds value there. I'll give you a very trivial example that I just showed this morning and at our internal event this morning at Vegas. Is actually this intelligent camera app. So something we actually released about a year ago is called the Microsoft Pix. It's an intelligent camera app. It has a lot of interesting technologies there. In fact, we used 20-some papers, you know, coming from MSR and put all those text there. But I'll give you one example that is actually, now if you use this app, you take a picture of anyone, I guarantee you, your eyes will be open. So is this a reasonable example? You know, so how did you guarantee when you take a picture of someone and this person's eyes are always open? So, and it turns out that we have already had this kind of computer vision, machine learning techniques there. The way you do that is you really take a longer sequence. You know, typically we take 10 frames, and the chances are you are not going to blink that long. So.
A human can, if you take 10 pictures, then a human can go through it and find the one with the eyes open.
Well, I think it's debatable. I think, Chris, you should add something you have been thinking about in the man-machine partnership, you know, how we think about this at Microsoft.
Sure. I think, first of all, this idea of artificial intelligence being a field in which you list all the capabilities of humans and then you cross them off one at a time. We achieved human parity in X, in Y, and Z. Very dystopian, depressing. What happens when you get to the bottom of the list? You know, that's very unappealing. The other general thought is that... it's true today, and it's going to be true for at least as far ahead as I can foresee, that the capabilities of machines are very different and complementary to the capabilities of people. And we know that when you combine things with different, you know, when you combine two classifiers together with decorrelated errors, the performance of the two together exceeds that of either alone. If you look at, chess playing machines, they can beat humans, but actually the human and machine together can beat any human or any machine, okay, the Centaur model. I think that's true very generally. So to give you a very concrete and sort of very near-term example of a project which was actually in the tech showcase, is the project called Inner Eye. So with there, what we're doing is helping radiation oncologists do radiation therapy planning. Now, it's a big deal because half of all of us are going to end up with some form of cancer during our lives. That's kind of depressing. And of those, half of those are going to need radiation therapy. So it's a very big deal. But to have radiation therapy, you fire radiation in from multiple angles. The idea is to dump as much energy into the tumor as possible, as little energy into good tissue as possible, and especially into vital organs. So you need a three-dimensional segmentation of the tumor and a three-dimensional segmentation of sort of vital organs, eyes, and whatever else might be. That's something which is currently done manually by oncologists looking through MRI scans, slice by slice, and segmenting them. It's tedious, it's slow, the oncologist gets kind of tired, and it's not so reproducible. It's screaming out for using machine learning. That's exactly what the Inner Eye project does. It's not trying to replace the oncologist, it's trying to say, look, here's a segmentation. Instead of taking half an hour, 3 hours in some cases, you know, in a few seconds it gives the oncologist segmentation, they can add then their expertise and say, actually, you know, it's not bad, but actually I can refine it and tweak it a little bit using their experience, and in a few minutes they've got a good segmentation. And it frees up their time to be doing things they should be doing, which is thinking more qualitatively about the whole care pathway, interacting with the patient. And I don't know how things are in the US, probably fairly similar. In the UK, we're facing a shortfall of around 4,000 radiologists. And so we're really screaming out for technologies which can empower those radiologists and make them more efficient and more effective, effectively freeing up the stuff that the machines are good at and leaving people to do the things that they're good at. So I see this complementarity as intellectually much more appealing, but also actually something of an imperative. Shall we just, we're kind of running out of time, let's just take one more question. Who gets the microphone first? Number two, okay.
If you look, Pedro
Domingos.
Can you
give us your name and, name and affiliation?
Pedro Domingos, University of Washington. So if you look at what's happened with technology and business in the last couple hundred years, every time a major new technology comes along, it leads to a new kind of dominant business. So, you know, like in the second half of the 19th century, it was the railways. And then, you know, when Ford invented, the assembly line, that was a whole new kind of business. And, you know, like multinationals were the product of telecoms and air travel and whatnot. And AI surely is one such major new technology. So the question is, what is the business... What is the new kind of business that is going to result from AI? How is it going to be different from the businesses that exist today, and how do we get there?
Well, I can give it a try, you know, at least to share some of the things that we have been thinking about, Pedro. The one key thing, you know, along this line of, you know, AI, you know, creating all the business, until now, people do believe that the magic is in the data. So you have to have data to make interesting things. That could change, you know, in the future, but this is where we see that. So people do worry about that. Does this mean that only the big five, you know, the top companies actually, you know, have opportunities, the rich gets richer, and, you know, all this kind of thing? At Microsoft, especially in MSR, you know, we have been thinking about this thing, you know, together with some economists, we have been thinking about this. One particular angle we actually thinking about is what we call the data as labor. So that might be one very interesting way to think about the future, as a society and the economy, the business model. You know, what does this really even mean? You know, because if you think about that, you know, especially, you know, I was educated by my colleague Jaron Lanier. You know, if this whole ML thing is going to really dominate, you know, would that be doomsday? You know, there's nothing, you know, for humans to do. You know, that's, we don't believe that is the case. You know, or, you know, you really think that, you know, there could be that the humans can continue to contribute, especially the lower part of the society, and the income-wise, you know, what can they really contribute to society, and what should be the future work, you know, for those people. So I think that's one particular, you know, you know, direction that we actually think about. It doesn't really mean just say, you know, we're coming up with a new company with one particular business model, monopolize everything and making most of the money. It's actually more thinking for the whole society.
Great, thank you very much. Well, we really are definitely well out of time there. So I know there are more questions, but I think we should probably wrap there so we can all get off and enjoy our nice dinner. But, you know, many, many interesting questions. And whatever happens over the next few years is clearly going to be an extremely interesting time for the field of AI. I'm going to invite Sandy back to make a few closing comments. Before I do, could I just ask you to join me in thanking Harry for a fascinating discussion.